Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Trek Talkin' and Beyond. As always, I'm Uncle Jim, and with me tonight I have GM Chris. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm fine. I think the weather's finally starting to turn around here in Vermont. We actually broke 40 today, so that's a heat wave.
We're still going below freezing at night here, so it's getting there.
Well,
Canada's warming
up,
but it's getting there.
It's getting there. So listen, guys, we have a good show planned for you tonight. It was more than a couple of weeks ago, Star Trek Horizon was released, and we had Tommy and the crew from Star Trek Horizon on the show, about 9-10 months ago, I want to say. I had posted a link for that on the Facebook page if you guys want to check that out. Great bunch of guys and really knowledgeable about Star Trek, great camaraderie. And so, of course, we reviewed Star Trek Horizon when it was released, and we tried to get Tommy back on the show with us, but I believe that he had dental oral surgery or something, so we weren't able to work that out. But we have him with us tonight. How you doing tonight, Tommy?
Oh, I'm just well, thank you. My teeth have recovered at least, so I'm here. Thanks for having
me. Well, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking with Tommy. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Horizon. For you, the guys that don't know that, what that is, Star Trek Horizon is a fan film, and I use that word very, very proudly, a fan film, a true fan film by a true fan. And Star Trek Horizon takes place during the Star Trek Enterprise time, which I think makes it unique because a lot of people didn't like Star Trek Enterprise. I'm not one of them. But Tommy's film takes place during Star Trek Enterprise. And Tommy, the thing that makes this film so unique is that Tommy not only wrote it, produced it, directed it, but he edited it, he filmed it, he actually sewed all the costumes, built all the props. His brother built the captain's chair. He did the soundtrack. Tommy is a one-man production studio, and Star Trek Horizon is a phenomenal fan film, and we loved it, by the way, Tommy.
Thank you.
We could not say enough good things about it when we reviewed it on a show when it first was released. And I mean, how long I have so many questions. Chris, did you have anything you wanted to ask Tommy before I start rolling?
One of the major questions I want to ask is I've done 3D work before. I went to college for it. So my first curious question is, what 3D software was that made in?
It was all done with 3DS Max 2012. And the reason I never upgraded is because of Autodesk's stupid policy they have now where you have to pay $185 a month to get their software. They no longer offer perpetual licenses, and that's the lowest you can go. But
yeah.
It was done in Max 2012. And, you know, if it weren't for the fact that I love 3DS Max, I would ditch Autodesk. But anyway, not to complain too much, but it was rendered with V-Ray in 3DS Max, and then everything was composited with Adobe After Effects.
Oh, nice. I'm a huge fan of the Adobe software. I use it personally all the time. I hear you about Autodesk. When Autodesk gobbled up XSI Softimage, and then they dissolved it. I shedded a tear when they closed that program down.
And they also gobbled up Wavefront, who made Maya. I mean, at least Maya is still around, but But I mean, Autodesk, I don't even remember where they came from, but 3ds Max wasn't even originally an Autodesk product. It used to be Discrete, I think.
Yeah. They used to do AutoCAD all the time, and then all of a sudden they just started gobbling up the video market stuff. And
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
3ds Max is pretty solid software. Like, I've never actually really used it, but it does look very professional and a very solid program. I'm just not sure of the, you know, rigging and stuff like that, texture mapping and whatnot.
Oh, it's got all the features. What do you usually use, by the way? Not to go on too much of a tangent.
Unfortunately, with the fall of XSI, I've dabbled in Blender because it's free software.
Right.
Can't argue with that. And of course, there's a lot of YouTube videos out there for support. But I find it's just painfully clunky. So I've kind of wandered away from the 3D work for a little bit.
I don't blame you. I mean, honestly, for me, I found everything other than 3ds Max painfully clunky. But I think part of the reason is because I grew up literally on 3ds Max. Like, I think I first started experimenting with it when I was like in my early teens, like eighth grade or earlier. And, you know, I've just literally, it's all I've used since then. But, you know, Maya is really good, too. Obviously, that's like the motion picture standard. But I think with either one of them, with any of these programs, it's really more about the artist than about the software in a lot of ways. And, you know,
I do have future plans to kind of wander back into the 3D work because I miss it. Everybody, you know, whenever anybody asks, what do you want to be when you grow up? And if you're a 3D animator or a 3D designer of any kind, your answer can be all of them because your limits are what can you not create on a computer? And the answer is you can do it all. I honestly must say I got me and the other guys who went into college as well too, who studied animation, we were blown away just by how high the quality was with the design. It's just, we watched it and we're like, oh my God, this is better than a Star Trek episode. And then we started really nitpicking it, trying to find really nitpicky things. And we couldn't, we kept saying, the Discovery, right? That was the main ship, right? We looked at it and we said, oh, it looks better than an actual physical model. Like if somebody was actually to build a 3-foot by 3-foot model and green screen it, it'd be hard to tell the difference between the two. Like we were starting to get nitpicky over like digging in deeper and deeper and trying to find stuff. And it was beautiful. Like we couldn't find it. We were blown away.
Well, that's quite the compliment. I certainly appreciate that. Thank you. Especially because I put so much time, especially into that model specifically. I mean, I did it and then I basically redid the entire thing because I wasn't happy with the first one. And literally probably a couple of months worth of time went into making that model with the textures and everything.
Guaranteed.
I hand painted all the, I hand painted all the little hall panels on there and everything in Photoshop. So it was quite the process.
It is painful. Not too many people can really wrap their head around it where, you know, I've talked to people before and they're like, well, why can't you make a full length animated movie? And I'm like, I don't have a staff of 500 people to make it in under a year. And they're like, well, doesn't the computer do all the work? And I'm like, yeah, after you hit the render button. But before that, it's about 100 hours of work per second sometimes, where it's just that frustrating when you count all the modeling time and texturing time.
Right.
And if you go into the detail of using Photoshop to paint everything on, you know, that's more time. And then you have to move everything, tell the computer where everything needs to go. And then after that, you need to render it, which it does.
And you have to know so many things too. I mean, like just the animation with having to know how animation curves and expressions work, let alone, you know, lighting and texturing and you've even, not to digress too much, but you can tell me if you agree with this. My biggest pet peeve with 3D artists are people who will use like 200 or more texture maps for one object and they don't like put everything on one UV sheet or like a few UV sheets. So you just have like textures spewed everywhere with hundreds of objects. It's so maddening when you're trying to work with other people's models because then you have to come in and reassign everything. They have hundreds of shaders. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And the next thing that always gets me too is when you're doing models, because you always do a close-up shot, a medium shot, and a far shot, because the further an object gets away, the less detail you're going to see. So So you're not going to be using your high intense textures on something far away, because it will save you so much in render time. But then it was frustrating seeing people work on something and it's a million. Well, we had everything based off polygons, and for everybody who doesn't know what it is, think of it like patches on a soccer ball. Models are kind of built that way. It's a crude example, but it's a modest one. So the more panels you put on it, the better the detail, but the longer it takes to make the final product. But if the object is 500 kilometers away, you're just not going to see it. And that was a frustrating thing for me, where it's like, it's like 4 million polygons, and it's like, okay, it's 4 pixels on a screen. I don't care, sort of thing.
Right. Well, this might even be a good segue at some point too, but I've been working with Mark Rademacher's ISS Enterprise model, that NASA warp ship that he designed that became really big in the news 6 to 12 months ago. And because I'm using the design for Project Discovery, my original movie that I'm working on right now, I talked to Mark and he's working with me on it. It's really cool. But he sent me that model, and like, I literally think I'm going to have to remodel it because it's so detailed. Like, I've never seen a model that is that high poly and that detailed, to the point where, like, on my computer, which is a pretty solid computer, I literally can't hardly move the viewport in 3ds Max because that's how detailed it is.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's like, especially for like motion picture needs. And if you're not rendering in 4K, and we're not, definitely that kind of detail just slows you down way too much.
It hurts. And then I can only imagine with the rendering, where the computer has to calculate all the light bouncing around in that scene.
Yeah.
It takes days to get like a minute long shot out. And then it really hurts when you take it to editing and something's moving too fast or too slow, or a texture is popping. There's a weird artifact where a shadow doesn't exist. And you just go,
Why I would always do viewport previews before I would render, like those long animations. I would do like a really quick, because I learned my lesson the hard way after a few times that happened. It's like, well, I am not waiting days and days for another render that's not going to come out right ever again.
Yeah, I got lucky with Softimage, where it had a quick render. It wouldn't render everything, but you can fully render a single frame out of 30 frames and see, is everything breaking apart before I hit the start render button?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do too, except in V-Ray it's a little more, it's not like a quick render button, but I'll just go in and drop down all my settings to really low quality for a test render before I do the real deal.
Well, I got to say, Tommy, I think your version of Discovery looked better than the Enterprise on Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate that.
I completely agree.
I mean, your Enterprise, I mean, it's not the – your NX-01 looked just spectacular. I mean, I think it looked better than what we saw on the TV show back in 2005. It was
thank you. That's very nice of you to say. Well, I mean, I was such a big fan of the ship, too. You know, I just put so much time into recreating that as accurately as possible. Like, I've never been that anal before about having to accurately recreate something. And I went all the way with that one. So I'm glad it paid off. Thank you.
And I think it was so cool, the fact that you actually had the Enterprise show up, the actual Enterprise. Well, you had the Enterprise there. I thought that was really cool, too.
If only we could have had Scott Bakula.
That would have made it better. Just have him pop up and do a little voiceover.
Right. Yeah.
I think
I thought
David,
about ripping.
Do we have you with us, David?
Yes, Jim. I'm here.
Excellent. We're talking with Tommy about Star Trek Horizon. Just jump in if you have any questions. Okay.
Will do. I'm driving, so I'm gonna be muting myself so you guys don't get all the background noise. But Tommy, I have to say, big fan of Horizon. Love what you did with the movie. Was sad to hear that there's no follow-up there, but really glad you guys got to do what you did with the first one, and really happy that there was a bit of a follow-up with the Romulan War and some aspect there, and kind of nice to see people do things with the Enterprise timeline.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, and I'm glad you liked it. And you know, Enterprise was my favorite too, so it was really fun to work in that timeline.
And if anybody wants to give a call and talk to Tommy, if you have a question for Tommy about Star Trek Horizon or the failed or never released or off the ground Federation Rising, which we'll talk about a little bit later, or his new project, the number here is 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. Tommy will be with us until about 8:30, so give a call if you have a question for Tommy. So, yeah, anyways, I got to say that we had Ryan Husk on, about a month ago, Chris?
Approximately, yeah. That's about right.
Yeah, about a month ago. And he just couldn't stop praising your work that you did on Horizon. And he was a great guest to have on as well. And
I'm glad to hear that because I always praise him too. So I'm glad it's not one-sided.
No, it's definitely not. And, you know, something that I heard in a lot of the chat rooms and stuff flying around on the internet was the fact that, well, Horizon broke canon because of the timeline with the Romulans. And Spock says in The Balance of Terror that no ally had seen each other, blah, 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 blah. But I'm going to be anal here, and I'm going to come to your defense because, and this is why I think that the follow-up would have been phenomenal, because when J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek in 2009, everything that happens after Enterprise no longer happened. We have a completely clean slate, everything. TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TOS, all of that is completely changed. However, Star Trek Enterprise was not affected by the new timeline. Therefore, in the episode Minefield, where a lot of fans complain, well, the Federation didn't meet the Romulans yet, so therefore that doesn't count because it broke canon, it did not break canon because J.J. rebooted everything. Therefore, the Romulans could have met the Federation at any time after that. And so your follow-up that you were going to make would have fit perfectly into that timeline because you would have been creating it from scratch because it didn't really exist. It was all rebooted.
Right. Well, I appreciate you sticking to your guns and taking my side. But I do have to point out, as a canon nerd, which is why I find it funny that people accuse me of not being one. But the JJ thing created a new universe, so technically both things still happened. And I think, you know, in my opinion, Enterprise leads straight on to the Prime timeline, which is the original timeline. And then it would split off into the JJ one if you so desired. And so my thing with the whole Romulans, seeing the Romulans, which, by the way, I always thought that was stupid. There was a really strange story element to write. But Daikon, our main villain, had this helmet that covered up all his Romulan attributes, i.e. the pointy ears. And the soldiers that beamed onto the Discovery had helmets, which covered up their pointy ears. Now, you could say, wouldn't they analyze the bodies of those Romulan soldiers to find out, and then they would analyze their DNA or whatever and find out they were actually Vulcans? You could, but one thing I was going to do in Federation Rising, the sequel, which I thought would have been really cool, was there was going to be this plot element where the Romulan soldiers, their suits have this like pseudo self-destruct mechanism where when they die, it basically scrambles their genetic makeup in their body in a way, so you can't tell who they are. And that was not in Horizon, but it was going to be in Federation Rising. It was going to play into the story in a cool way where they actually wound up, our guys, our crew, wound up basically figuring that out and then using, you know, some technobabble to tie into the Romulan suits and fry them when the Romulans weren't expecting it, so they could win this battle. So it would have tied it in a lot of cool ways. But and the other thing is Kamar, our defector, is genetically modified to basically be human. She looks human. So we still haven't broken canon. We still haven't actually seen a Romulan in their with their Vulcan attributes face to face. So, you know, maybe there's a couple of workarounds, but canon is never actually broken in this, in my opinion.
Well, if you're going, well, like you said, you can pick which you want to follow. In my opinion, it's not, because JJ rebooted it. So you're free to do what you want with the Romulans, and I personally am totally fine with it. Because JJ's Klingons wore helmets similar to your Romulans, so that's how I fit that into that. So I don't know what your reasoning was for giving them helmets, but that's the way I took it. Hell, the Klingons wore helmets in JJ's verse.
Well, they had helmets in TOS. In the episode Balance of Terror, all the Romulans wore helmets.
Except for Centurion and Sarek, and not Sarek.
The guy who played Sarek. Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, that's what I was going for, was I was just tying into that, and it has a design similar to their helmets. So it was just, it wasn't like, you know, I just arbitrarily decided to give them helmets, but it worked as a way to both hide their identity and also tie into the TOS look.
Now, while we're talking about Horizon here, how long did it take you to actually make, how long from the time you decided that I'm going to make an Enterprise fan film, and I use the word fan film, we're going to talk about what fan film means a little bit later, but from the time you sat down and said, I want to make this movie, to the time we actually saw it, how much time had elapsed?
It was about 3.5 years total between the decision to do it and the writing and all that to the release.
Wow. And your brother did an excellent job on the captain's chair, by the way.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I'll tell him you said so.
So, yeah. And so you basically, you wrote the script.
Mm-hmm.
You designed all the Vulcan ships, all the space stations, all the Romulan ships, the NX-01s.
Well, some of the ships I didn't. So that was one area where I did have a little bit of help. So I did the NX-01. Eric Henry designed our Romulan space station, and then I textured it and spliced it up. He designed one or two additional Romulan spacecraft that I then went in and added to and textured up, so that was collaborative. And he did some other design, like he designed our helmet and then I modeled it. And then I had this guy, Alexander Clem, who's a really talented modeler, who modeled all three of the Vulcan ships for me. And Ryan McClure modeled our main Romulan ship. So that was really cool. He did a great job with that, modeling and texturing. And, you know, and then there were a couple of people here and there who helped out as well and contributed, you know, like a virtual set or contributed some other object throughout the movie.
But you basically, you hand-sewn all the uniforms. That's what we talked about on our last show when the guys were on with us. They said that you actually went and got the patterns and made the uniforms.
Yeah, I did.
Wow, so you're a seamstress too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and what I had to do too was I basically had to make my own pattern out of like a combobulation of like 1970s jumpsuit patterns, because the one from Roddenberry.com was kind of a crappy pattern and it didn't really work well. So I found this tremendous article on the 1701 or whatever, however you pronounce it, but it's a forum for people who are creating their own Star Trek costumes. And this guy made this really long thread with detailed descriptions of how he created his own Enterprise uniform. So I took that as like my big tutorial and followed that closely. And that's how I basically taught myself to sew with my mother's help. And I had to, you know, get these other patterns together and create a combobulated pattern between them to make the uniforms.
And they look phenomenal. I might add as well. Now,
yeah, they look identical to the ones on the show. They look just absolutely identical.
You also made all the props as well, like the phaser rifles and things as well, correct?
I didn't make all the props, no. So the Romulan phasers, which aren't seen too much, But those are 3D printed, and Eric Henry designed them. The phaser rifle was one that I got from Triple Fiction Productions. They make like wooden props on eBay. And the scanners were made by Scott Irwin, and the replica like Enterprise scanners were made by him. And then there was other smaller stuff throughout that I put together myself in terms of props.
And how about the soundtrack? Did you write the compose the music as well?
I did, actually. I wrote about an hour and 22 minutes worth of music for the movie.
Wow. Just incredible.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow. Now, I got to say that at this point, I think, it's safe to say, this whole thing with CBS and Axanar. Now, at first, when it first happened, and I heard about it, we had scheduled to have Peter and Rob Burnett on the show, and they couldn't make it. We rescheduled it, and they couldn't make it. And then finally, we just didn't bother. They were too involved in what was going on. And right. At first, I think I might have been more leaning towards supporting them. However, I've been on their boards and things, and I've been defending you, and I defended James mm-hmm. Cawley, and Star Trek Continues, because I've been hearing some things come out of them that are very unbecoming of the Star Trek community. I think one of the things that makes Star Trek fans the best fans is that we always stick together. We're mm-hmm. one big community. And when I hear things like, it took him 4 years to make that, and look what we did in 20 minutes, or, you know, we're real professionals. We're not Elvis Presley impersonators or voice actors, or we're writing our own unique story. We're not copying and just acting out in our garage what we want to do. When I hear things like that, it kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Me too. Was always a point of consternation for me with Axanar's campaign, where, you know, they build themselves to as the only professional independent fan film, and I was never a fan of that. And when they would make comments about, you know, about Collie or Continues or whatever, I just don't see why, you know, why go out of your way to say things like that unless you're trying to be divisive in some way. And,
exactly.
You know, I have historically tried to remain very neutral on the Axanar issue, and or at least objective. I've tried to call it down the middle. And I feel like everybody should approach these situations that way. And, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like they themselves always do that.
Well, what bothers me the most is that although Continues in Phase 2 are Kirk and Spock type of deals, where yours is a completely, totally new, original everything. New characters, it's a completely new thing. And what they're doing is fine. I have nothing, I mean, they're phenomenal productions that
yeah.
they're doing. Phenomenal. But what you did with Enterprise, I think, eclipses what we saw in a 20-minute prelude to Axanar. When you look at the fact that they raised over $1 million, that Alec Peter paid himself, what, $38,000 to produce that? He paid himself a salary.
Is that how much he paid? Did he pay himself? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what I read, and that was one of the contention. One of the problems is that they
yeah.
paid themselves, and you're not allowed to do that.
He paid himself $38K for Prelude?
He paid himself $38,000 salary, and that was part of the problem. Whether or not that
for
was particularly
Prelude to Axanar, or
well, I don't know whether that was for Prelude or whether that was for the whole. Well, all they've produced is Prelude so far.
Right.
I have to you know, and the fact that they had Richard Hatch, they had all these real actors, which we had on the show, and were you know, Kate Vernon, they're phenomenal. Where you had Ryan Weber, or yeah, Ryan, right? Yeah, it was Ryan and Mark, and you know, what you did with yours was, I think, so much. What you did with Enterprise, I think, was what a fan does with something they love, and it comes across in the final product. You know, you love Star Trek Enterprise, and you wanted to give something back to the Star Trek fans, and you did just that. You weren't there saying, well, mine is better, mine is this, mine is that, I need to build a studio, I need to do this, I need you. You just went out there, and you did it, and you let the product speak for itself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know,
and I am so ticked off at the Axanar people, because I think that they are driving a spike in the community of Star Trek right now, and they're dividing everybody over who's right and who's wrong. And because of that, we are not going to see the Federation Rising, which I think would have been a phenomenal, phenomenal movie if we were able to see it. And I also think that Vic is having problems raising money for his, because I think they contacted him and told him he couldn't raise money for his next episode. So now he's trying to collect money by scaling. He's climbing a mountain.
Really?
Chavez Rock,
I hadn't heard
I think.
About that. Vasquez? I knew he was.
Yeah,
I didn't know that he was collecting money with that.
I think he's trying to raise money with that because of I think he was told he can't crowdfund for his either. And all of this stems from Axanar. And
you know what's
funny
about that? Isn't Vic like the nicest guy? I don't know if you've ever talked to him, but like I've talked to him, he's been really nice to me.
I talked to him at I saw him at a Star Trek convention, and I have a feeler out to have him come on the show and talk about Star Trek with us, but he's been very busy, but I'm still working on that. James Cawley lives about 45 minutes from me. He's up in Ticonderoga. I'm down here in Vermont. I've been trying to get him on the show. So we're always getting feelers out there. But what exactly happened? Let's clear this up right now. Were you ready to go? Were you all set and ready to go with Federation Rising?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we announced on Sunday. When was it? It was a week ago, last Sunday, so the 17th, I believe, when we announced that we were going to do a Kickstarter for Federation Rising. That's also when we announced that Federation Rising was coming out. And then by Wednesday, the 20th, I received a call from Bill Burke at CBS, the Senior VP of Consumer Products. And he said CBS Legal reached out to me, and they asked me to reach out to you and to let you know that they strongly suggest that you do not go forward with your plans to make a Horizon sequel. And you can be assured that this conversation is being had with the other productions. Now, as a side note, I don't know if it actually has or will be, but he said this is also directly related to the legal troubles with the Axanar case. And I said, okay. I wish I had asked some more questions, but I was just kind of, I didn't know what to say at the time. But I said, okay, thanks for letting me know. I guess I'll cancel my movie. Talk to you later. And he said, okay, if you have any questions, feel free to call me. I called him back about 5 minutes later with more questions, and he didn't pick up. I left a voicemail, and he never returned my call. So
now, Tommy, when I keep, when you hear things, you're only hearing from the Axanar point of view. But let me ask you this: as somebody that actually produced and put out a fan film, is there an issue set of standards or bylaws or guidelines or whatever that CBS Paramount says to you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, and don't do this? Or is it all kind of, I mean, how do they determine who's going to be able to make one and who's not and what's allowed and what's not? Did they ever tell you that?
Well, no. And so I would put it this way. CBS are the parents who know when their kid is doing something that they can't openly approve of, but they also don't really care. And so they don't bring it up to the kid. They don't talk to the kid about it. The kid keeps doing it, and everybody knows that everybody knows everything, but it just keeps going until one day, whatever the kid is doing turns and becomes much worse, like, you know, whatever. And then the parents have to step in and say, okay, you know, we've let you go for a long time, and you know we've let you go, but now we have to do something. We can't keep letting you do whatever you're doing. And that's generally been the situation. And I think part of the reason is if they set hard and fast rules, they will have to enforce them. They will have to maintain them themselves. And then they will also risk creating loopholes where other people can come in and reinterpret those rules. And then CBS won't be able to get out of them because they've already made the rules. So there has never been an official to anybody, you can and can't do these things. And it's just been kind of understood that CBS lets you go and you don't step on their toes. That's been the situation until now, and who knows what it's going to be in the future.
Well, I know way back in 1991, I did a Star Trek convention in upstate New York, and actually Jim Colley called me and he said, hey, I'm going to film some Star Trek episodes up at the old abandoned Frontier Town, and I want to come down and promote my Star Trek films. Is that okay? And I said, sure, come on down. I gave him a free table and everything, set it all up. Well, I got a letter from Paramount Studios that they had, and which actually I was kind of impressed by. They had a copy of the flyer for my Star Trek convention. How they got it out there, I'll never know. But
right.
They told me that I could not advertise with a picture of Worf on my flyers, that I had to take that off the flyers immediately and put Michael Dorn's picture on there.
Huh.
And that was just a Star Trek convention back in 91.
Right. Well, I didn't know about that. And there was a time, too, where like they took down fan websites in the 90s. But, you know, after that, it became more open. There became an understanding that fan films existed and they were okay and people could do what they wanted. You know, New Voyages, James Colley was the first one to really make it big and to rebuild his set, which was really cool at the time, and it's still cool, but it was really new. And, you know, he was even involved with Enterprise when they did the Mirror Darkly episode and they rebuilt the TOS sets. They used some of his stuff. And, you know, he was, I believe, Doug Drexler or someone like that, like, gave him actual plans for the sets to build his sets. And so, I mean, there was a good working relationship there because I think they realized after the debacle that you had and other debacles in the 90s that it's better to embrace fan productions until they decided not to with Axanar.
Now, do you think that it's strictly the fact that they were touting that they raised – first of all, how much did it cost for you to make Horizon?
Well, from what I understand, Alec was saying it cost me $68,000, which is not true. It cost me $28,000, and that went entirely to costuming materials, props, hardware, software, meals for the cast and crew, et cetera. And then that's not also including the money that I'm now paying for the donor rewards, which is immense. So, but yeah, it was $28,000 just to make the movie.
See, that's what I thought it was around. I remember when we had you on the show with the guys. I remember you saying around 20 something, and it wasn't jiving with what I was hearing from them. Now, they raised $1.6 million. $1.6 million. Let that sink in.
We
got this phenomenal movie from you for, let's call it $30,000. And we got a 20-minute movie from them for $1.5 million. And they came back looking for more.
Right.
Now, well, do you think that this has anything to do with why CBS Paramount decided we have to step in? Because we're talking millions versus thousands.
Well, one thing I will say, to be fair, is that Prelude to Axanar was made for $80,000 to $100,000, which in my opinion is still too much because it was a 20-minute interview film, basically. It was just talking heads in front of a green screen. And which, by the way, I did all of their green screen compositing and virtual sets on that movie.
So then why are they saying the things they're saying about you if you actually worked on their production?
I don't know. And I didn't see a cent of money for that either. It was all volunteer. But, you know, they haven't targeted me too much specifically, thankfully. But, I mean, there was a blow up the other day where Alex said some things publicly about me because he thought I said some things about him. I didn't. But the thing is, here's the thing with what it costs to make a movie. It really depends on your methodology. Now, there is part of me that says, if you're really that passionate about making your movie and about being a movie maker, you will go out there, you will shoot it yourself, you'll write it yourself, you'll edit yourself, you'll do all the effects yourself, you'll write the music yourself, you'll make all the costumes yourself, because that's what I did. Now, I realize that that is not feasible for most people, and I'm not saying that because, like, oh, I'm some wonderfully talented guy who just can do this and other people can't, but, like, for a lot of reasons, it's just not feasible for one person to sink that much time into a project. But at the same time, if you're really passionate about it, you'll do what you have to do. Now, what they did, and that's also why I was able to make it for $28,000, because I didn't pay anyone. I didn't have Tobias Richter that I was paying gobs of money to do my effects, because he is really good and he deserves what he gets paid. But so I had to do it myself. And, you know, none of the actors took pay in that movie either. And so the thing is, when you start making a movie the quote-unquote traditional way, costs will begin to skyrocket. So, for example, Project Discovery, my next original movie, feature film, is going to be a sci-fi, and it'll be largely green screen again, because that's cheaper. Since I do not want to shoot in my parents' basement again, it's going to cost me a lot of money just to rent a green screen soundstage. Now, I'm picturing a 16-day shoot, and in L.A., which is where I want to shoot, to rent a green screen soundstage for 16 days is going to be $20,000 to $30,000, closer to $30,000, just for your rental. So
Ow.
You can see, yeah, like your costs will go up and up and up and up. And that's not including flights. You know, if you're flying out SAG actors, which is the union, you have to fly them first class. You have to have a certain kind of transport to and from the studio. You have to get certain kinds of hotels. So you're talking thousands upon thousands of dollars, not just for the actors' pay, but for their transport and their lodging.
Wow.
And if I was going to fly out my people, I did the math, fly them out coach, and they aren't SAG, put them up in a decent hotel, but certainly not, you know, a five-star, and for 16 days, it would be around $3,000 for one person. So you can see how that's going to add up for cast. Catering is going to be $15,000 to $20,000 just for your food on set, when you have to have three meals a day. It adds up so much if you're going to do it traditionally. Now, that said, that's still not $1.6 million. I have budgeted $250,000 to make Project Discovery, and hopefully I will reach it. But the reason I budgeted $250,000 is because I'm not doing it in my parents' basement all by myself this time. And I think it's totally possible, with the right determination and passion and people, that you can make a really good sci-fi movie for $250,000. Now, if I was building my own soundstage, if I was retrofitting a warehouse to make it into my own entire movie studio, if I was building my own sets, which may very well be immense, costs are going to skyrocket. And you are going to go up into the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, It's going to cost you hundreds of thousands just for the rental and your space for a year, let alone on the cost to renovate it, to soundproof it, to build your sets, to pay construction workers, etc. So I think, people can make their own conclusions on what that means, on if that's overreaching or not. But I think it certainly may fall outside of the category of what is traditionally viewed as a fan film. And it is a spectrum. It is, you know, you can't just have one point where you say it's a fan film now and like anything before that it or after it isn't a fan film. It's just kind of this gray area. You know, I would say like Renegades is really close to that point of not being a fan film, but they do some things differently, like the fact that they aren't building their own studios and they aren't asking for as much money, etc. So, you know, it's a spectrum. And, you know, Axanar took it to a whole new level. And personally, I don't think $2 million is that much money for CBS, because that's the cost to make like an episode of Enterprise. You know, they paid, I think, $18 million to build the sets for Enterprise. And that was amortized over the cost of the entire first season. So, I mean, just saying it, like $1 to $2 million is not that much in the land of movies and TV. But I think a lot of it, too, might be where things go from here. You know, it's $1 million, it's $2 million now. Is it $5 million a couple of years from now? Is it $10 million? And how long does it go before CBS loses their property? They lose their copyright, because now you have a quote-unquote movie studio that's developing a $10 million quote-unquote fan film. And is that really a fan film anymore? I mean, I guess the point I'm making is that the definitions get really blurred here. And I think that was a lot of the problem. And I think, you know, just mainly there isn't ever one cause for anything. So the money may have been an issue with Axanar, but I think that there were a lot of things about that particular production that may have caused issues.
Now, before we move on to talk about your new project, let's just wrap up this whole Axanar scenario here. Do you think that in some point in the future we might actually get to see Federation Rising, or do you think that CBS Paramount has basically said no more, it's done, we're not going to allow it?
I think before Horizon was out, I was very adamant that I would never do a sequel, and then I decided to. And I think now, given the current climate and what I was told by CBS, there is even a less chance that you will see another Horizon movie from me than there was before Horizon was out, if that makes sense. So the point is, it's incredibly unlikely, basically not going to happen. And part of that, too, is like, let's suppose that, you know, all of this blows over and in a year or two, CBS says, okay, you guys can go back to doing what you're doing, do whatever you want. The problem is, I want to continue to pursue this as my professional career. This is always what I've been building towards literally my entire life. And, you know, in a year or two, the plan is to be doing other stuff. The plan is to be working on my own movie, to be working in Hollywood. And now was a good time. It was the only time to do a Horizon sequel. And just like with Horizon, it was the only time to do Horizon, which is why I did it. So just for me personally, I don't imagine that in a year or two the timing will be there. But, you know, who knows? If I find myself in a position to do it and CBS says it's okay, I might, but I find it very unlikely.
Now, why don't you think, why is it that Lucasfilm doesn't have these problems with the Star Wars fan films that are made? And there's a lot of them.
Well, there is a bit of a difference, I think. Now, I could be wrong on this because I haven't done much research. But from what I understand, generally speaking, with Star Wars fan films, they do not reach the level that some of the Star Trek stuff has. They don't go out and crowdfund for hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And also from what I understand, most of them are not actual quote-unquote movies. They're not features. They're usually like 5 to 15 minute short films. And I think that that is a big difference. And Lucasfilms has found a way to monetize that in a way, but I think it's a totally different situation. And I think, honestly, there probably actually is a bigger fan film community for Star Wars than Star Trek. So there's more of a chance for monetization out of that than there is with the Star Trek stuff, in my opinion.
And I would agree. Most of the Star Wars fan films that I've seen, there have been some good ones. They're basically Jedi battles, Sith battles.
Right.
They're, like you said, they're maybe 15, 20 minutes long, and that's it. As good as they are, they're relatively short. Now, before we move on and talk about your new project, Chris, did you have anything you wanted to ask Tommy about in regards to Horizon or anything before we moved on?
Not at the moment. I'm really eager to hear about Project Discovery, because this is sounding like something incredibly new, incredibly original, and my ears are just ready to hear what's coming in. Like, I love fan productions, don't get me wrong, but it's always easier to kind of make something from something that's already been established. And I'm always eager to hear the new and upcoming, and judging by what I've seen on Horizon, I'm even more excited to see what is coming down the production line.
Good call,
well,
my friend. Good call. How about you, David? Did you want to ask Tommy anything about Horizon before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I don't want you to feel left out or anything.
I'm enjoying the talk.
Okay. All right. So Tommy, why don't you fill us in on your new project? Well, what it's about, when we can expect to see it, how we can help you out with it, and just give us the standard spiel.
Absolutely. So Project Discovery is an original science fiction space epic set in the 2060s. And the story, the basic tagline or short synopsis, is that it follows the crew of the very first Earth warp ship, or faster than light ship. And where this comes from is Ryan Weber and Ryan's co-developing this with me, and he was also co-developing Federation Rising. We are obviously huge Star Trek fans. We are huge fans of the Star Trek message and the ideals behind Star Trek. And we are also huge science nerds in general, and, you know, interested in this notion of bringing humanity together to go to the stars. And that is the story of our movie. It's taking all of those influences from Star Trek and from our own life and putting them into this movie. And the movie takes place in a time that's basically an extension of now. So what that means is, for a brief history recap, 1961, Yuri Gagarin was the first person to go to space. He was a Russian, and he was put into low Earth orbit. And before that, I believe in 57, the Russians launched Sputnik. And Sputnik and Yuri basically lit a fire under the United States' rear end and got them interested in space travel, but it was not for the right reason. So Kennedy comes out, and he makes these great speeches about how we have to go to the moon. And, you know, the famous one, we choose to do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. You listen to that whole speech, and it's actually really, you know, it's kind of jarring to go back and listen to how things were presented. And it was presented very much in the light of, we go to the moon to take, you know, peace and greatness and everything that's America. We take America to the moon because America's great, and we're doing it to beat the dirty communists, the Russians, and we have to be there first because we're the best. And that's what got people excited about going to the moon. And it worked. You know, if you asked the scientists and the engineers in the 60s, early 60s, can we do this? They were scrambling. They were not saying yes, a lot of them. And by 1969, we did it. We put people on the moon, and we did it. We were the first there. And then in 1972, because we had won the space race in 69, 72 was the last time we ever went to the moon, because as soon as we won that race, people lost interest. They just, like, why bother keep going if it's not because we have to beat the dirty communists to the moon, and because we did it. And so then you look at NASA's budget, the highest it was in the mid to late 60s was 4.5% of the total federal budget went to NASA. Take it to now, to 2012, NASA got 0.5% of the federal budget, which is basically nothing. And so this decline of interest in space has continued, and in our story, it continues even more. And it's the trend that we see just played out. And so by the 2060s, basically there is no funding for space. Nobody cares. Nobody's interested at all. But then there is this coalition, if you will, of, in our story, because NASA closes down in the 2050s because they don't have any more funding. And so then a coalition of scientists and engineers, the best and the brightest from Earth, from the United States, from NASA, from Russia, from China, from Europe, they all get together and form a private space agency traded on the world economy called the Earth Space Agency. And it is this agency's mission to build the first warp ship and take people out into the great unknown. And it is this mission called Project Discovery that reignites the passion of everyone on Earth for the space program. You have people from all over the world suddenly getting interested in going to space again. And the team itself, the crew itself, is a multicultural crew of people because it's this conglomeration of many countries that put this thing together and are trying to make it happen. So the whole point of the story is that we can strive to be better. We can strive to be one people, one planet, going to space, and it can be a very positive, uplifting thing. And our story is about them going to space. It's about them meeting the first alien society that humans have ever met when they go to space, and what the reaction is to that, and then coming back. So it's a very prescient story based on the way things are happening now in our space programs. And it's also just a story that I think a lot of Star Trek fans would like, because it's based very much on those things that they like about Star Trek in terms of the ideals and what it means. And there's a lot of real science that we're trying to use too, to make it a pseudo real science movie, to have it like be one of those almost a science fact kind of movie. And that's the direction that we're going with Project Discovery.
Now, you said earlier that you've budgeted $250,000.
Yep.
So how can we help you? Where can we go to help you reach that goal?
So, and for anybody who's curious what the money is going to, you know, that's basically what I described earlier with the budgeting, but it's also described on our Kickstarter. And you can go to our Kickstarter to find that. And currently we're in the process of setting up a Facebook page for it. But for now, you can go to the Horizon page to find out about it, facebook.com/sthorizon. You can go to Kickstarter, search for Project Discovery. You can go to projectdiscoverymovie.com. All of them have links to our Kickstarter. And you can check it out. We have a lot of options there, various donation levels that you can check out to help make this happen. And, you know, we, over the weekend, especially, I'm planning on doing some really cool media releases for the film. And over next week, we'll be doing some really cool media releases. And as I said, we have Mark Rademacher's Enterprise ship that we are kind of retrofitting for our ship, the IV-202 Explorer. And for anybody who doesn't know, Mark is the one that designed the ISS Enterprise that kind of became a huge deal in the news. And it was for a NASA contest. There was supposed to be a concept of the first warp ship. And so I talked to Mark about this, about using the ship, and he got really excited about it and really excited about this movie, because it's basically everything. This story is everything that he designed the ship for. And so we're working together on this, and we're going to be working together on the movie. It's really cool, I think.
Now, based on what we saw, what you gave us with Star Trek Horizon, this is going to be a step above what we saw in Horizon?
That's the plan. The thing I like to say is that I did Horizon for 28,000, so let's go for 250,000, and that's 9 times more, so we're going to make a movie that's 9 times bigger and better. And a lot of the reason for that, too, is because I learned so much over the 3.5 years on Horizon, and now I am able to put that into my next project and make it even better, and especially with an actual budget this time, so I can get a director of photography to run the camera. I can get some costume people just so I'm not doing everything. I can focus on just directing and writing with Ryan. It's going to make the movie so much better, in my opinion.
Well, that's a pretty big step to outdo Horizon.
Oh, thanks.
So,
hopefully we can do it. One small step for a filmmaker. So,
are you going to have anybody from anybody that was in Horizon? Are they going to work with you? Any of your actors or anything, or they all moved
on?
Yeah.
No, that's the plan. We will be using them in the movie. We haven't announced yet where they will be placed in the cast, but we will also be we're also in talks with a lot of other people for the film. And we're in talks with some other really cool sci-fi actors that people might have heard of to be in the movie. So, and as soon as, you know, I'm ready and they're ready to make that announcement, look out for that.
Now, since you're going to be using a budget, you estimate it's going to be quicker than 3.5 years before we see the finished project?
Yeah, the idea, the plan is to have it out by the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. So the short schedule would be we finish our fundraising in on June 22nd. We've made our goal. And by the way, I will also add that on Kickstarter, if you do not reach your goal, you get no money. So when people pledge, it's literally just a pledge. No cards are charged until the end of the campaign, and only if you've reached your goal. So in this case, if we make, you know, not $249,000 in pledges, we don't get any money because we didn't hit 250. So
yeah, you have
just
to make
keep
it or that's it. Yeah.
Yep, that's right. So, but the timetable for this one is finished on June 22nd. Pre-production, we'll book a studio. We'll begin shooting December of this year, hopefully. And then we will have all of 2017 to finish post-production on the movie. And also, in the meantime, between now and December when we start shooting, we'll also be developing a lot of the CGI stuff that we'll be using in the movie. So that'll be ready to go as well.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. And I cannot tell you how excellent Star Trek Horizon really is. You just did a phenomenal job on that.
Thanks so much.
Chris, do you have any final questions for Tommy? Because we're running down here.
I guess what I want to say is thank you. Horizon was beautifully done. Honestly, I was blown away just by the sets, the 3D works, the costumes. It was a masterpiece. It was great. I loved it. And I watched it on YouTube, and I wish I pledged to it because it was just that phenomenal. And now with Project Discovery coming in, the one big thing I've always said to people out in society and on the show here is I wish Axanar, with its massive budget, went for something original. They could go with the flavor of Star Trek all they want, and just not tread on the ideas of it, because $1.6 million, you can do practically anything you want with that.
Yep.
You can pay for licensing, or you can create something really nice. And what you're doing with Project Discovery is kind of what I wish Axanar did. You have the manpower to create something brilliant, and this is something original, and I am thrilled. I can't wait to see it. And I hope you reach your goal, because this is gonna you have the essence of Star Trek without running straight on into any copyright issues. It's completely unique, completely original, and with Horizon being a very good portfolio piece to what you can do, I'm gonna see what you can do like as a next step sort of thing. I can't wait. I absolutely cannot wait.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I really appreciate that, and it's quite the endorsement to receive. So thank you. And you know, it's funny throughout my quote unquote career, how my expectations have changed. I remember there was a time when I thought, man, what could I do with $20,000 to make a movie? And then I had it and I made a movie and that's what I did with it. And, you know, I think now, man, what would I do with Axanar's $1.6 million? Oh, that would be so nice, you know, just to be able to have that freedom. But, you know, what would I do with $250,000 to make a movie? And it's just because for me, everything I do has to be a step forward from what I did last time. And if it's a step sideways, I don't see the point in doing it. And,
yes.
You know, I think that's the best way for anybody to get better at what they do and to learn. And for me, my passion is movie making. And it just so happened when I made Horizon that my passion for movie making overlapped with my passion for Star Trek. And now I'm hoping to be able to get the funding to move out and do to show my passion for an original story.
I pray that this goes off because even with it coming out so quickly, like projecting for it to be late 2017, early 2018, that's a tight schedule for everything
yeah.
that needs to get done. That is a painfully tight schedule. Like I'm thinking of like other budgeted films. Angry Video Game Nerd and Ashens. They've had movie projects, and some take longer than others. But it's just that's quick. That's a quick time frame, and I can't wait. I honestly cannot wait.
Thank you so much. I learned a lot from Horizon. It was part of the reason why I feel a little bit more comfortable with that schedule. And the fact that I have Ryan this time around, too, to really help out, and I'll have another crew of people and post people to help out as well, which will really make a difference so that I'm literally not sitting there creating every tiny little detail for every little scene myself for 3.5 years. I'll be able to delegate, which will be really nice. And it'll be beneficial, too, because then I'll be able to get other creative influences in on the project, which is such a wonderful thing to have.
Oh, absolutely. I hate working on projects alone because it's just – I wish to have input and feedback from others, right? Even if it's just me talking out loud to somebody, that is what I want, because then I can judge feedback just even by expression. Like I don't want to be rooted to a computer just hammering away at whatever. I want interaction. I want a group. I want peers. And yeah, I hear you.
Well, that was one of the hardest things for me on Horizon 2, especially towards the end. Was the fact that it really felt like a lot of the time I was working in a vacuum. You know, I was basically the only one working on the movie. Occasionally Ryan would come in and some other people would do some rotoscoping for me. But, you know, most of the time it was just me plugging away at my scenes and I'd show them to, you know, Ryan or a couple other people every now and then and get some feedback. But it gets really, really hard, you know, when you're doing all of that yourself for so long. And it's just, it becomes really tiring and really frustrating, and I think can hinder your project as well, which is why it's really great to have other people to work with, which is one of the things I'm really looking forward to about Project Discovery.
I hear you there.
David, we're pretty much out of time with Tommy, so before we have to say goodbye, is there anything you wanted to add or anything you wanted to say to Tommy before we have to cut this short?
As you're describing Project Discovery, I have to say that it sounds like the movie that I've been waiting to see for several years.
Oh, well, thank you. I got really worried at first that you were going to say it sounded just like some other movie you'd already seen, and I was like, ah, shoot. But thank you.
Nope. No, it's like I don't watch a lot of movies. And that's a personal thing. But this is one that if you told me it was coming out in theaters, I would say, so midnight release, let's go see it.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I totally would go to a midnight release of that. Yeah, I totally would.
And that's
the
highest compliment I can get.
Well, thank you. But I will just say, just to be fair to somebody, I don't know who, but there's also a lot of people that go to midnight screenings of Tommy Wiseau's The Room. So... Just saying. For anybody who hasn't heard of The Room, it's widely considered the worst film ever made, and that's why it's popular. But no, I mean, in all honesty, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I will say too, the nice thing about doing an original project is, you know, we can potentially get distributors. You know, if we get funding to make this, and I can pre-sell it actually to a distributor, and they're locked in to make DVDs for us and distribute it to all the stores and maybe even the theaters. So, you know, that's another possibility too that we have with this that we did not have with Horizon.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Tommy, that wraps up our time with you for tonight, believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was a really nice discussion.
No, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend with some Star Trek nerds. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Star Trek nerds are my people, so it was no problem.
And once you get moving, maybe we can have you back on and we can talk about how you're moving along and if you're meeting your goals, and we can talk about it a little bit later on when you get rolling.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to do that. Just shoot me an invite whenever you'd like, and I'd be happy to come back.
Well, thank you very much, Tommy, and you have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was Tommy Kraft from Star Trek Horizon. You can check out his fan film. It's available on YouTube. I also have a link up on the Facebook page. You can check that out. David and Chris and I are still going to be hanging around for another couple of minutes, though, because I wanted to talk a little bit about a convention I went to over the weekend called ChaseCon. Now, Ken and I do ChaseCon every year. Actually, it's only been 3 years, so this would be the third year we did it, but the second year that we were involved in the game room. And usually, we do Star Trek Attack Wing. And unfortunately, this year, Star Trek Attack Wing didn't do too well. We were there for 4 hours and didn't get a single person to come over to play. But don't get all the gloom and doom, the game is dead stuff going on, because that's not why.
Doom.
Yeah, let's not go there. Let me explain. The guy that ran the convention entered a contract with a gaming company, Cooper's Game Cave, I believe they were. And they really, really pushed Star Wars really hard. Now, when Star Trek Attack Wing first came out, I didn't want to buy it online. I couldn't find anywhere that had it. I called up Cooper's Game Cave because they're right down the road from where I camp, where Ken and I play Star Trek Attack Wing on the picnic table with the umbrella and the salsa and stuff. And they said, oh, yeah, we have those. So I ran down there to buy it, and they had a whole wall full of Star Wars and maybe 4 starter sets for Star Trek and none of the ships. So I bought and I said, hey, you guys really ought to get into this game. And they're like, blah, 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 blah. Well, they chose to go into Star Wars. Not only Star Wars, but they had Imperial Assault going on there, and they had Armada going on there, and they had Magic the Gathering going on there. And me and Ken got stuck all the way in the back to do Star Trek Attack Wing. And nobody made it past the Star Destroyers and the AT-ATs and the Magic and the X-Wings and things to even get to see us and the Star Trek game. So that's why we didn't do well. Not because there wasn't an interest in the game, but because they had to go through so many other cool things to get to us that they never got to us. So I'm going to change that next year, though. So I wanted to throw that out there. So, yeah, that's what happened. But I have those Hot Wheels, the large ships that they have, and I'm going to get the large bases from Star Wars X-Wings miniatures, like for the Millennium Falcon, and I'm going to use the big models next year, and I'm going to make 8x10 enlargements of the cards. Because when we play the demo game, you just get a captain and maybe one crew member, a photon torpedo, and maybe one other card that I feel like throwing in there. And they'll be 8x10, so you'll be able to see them from across the room. And hopefully, the big cards and the big ships will be enough to overshadow what's going on with the Star Wars stuff. And I think I'm even going to bring my daughter's iPad and her little docking station and maybe play a little bit of Klingon attack music to get people more psyched. So what do you think, David? Do you think that'll do it?
I think that has as good a chance as anything else. That you need you need a good scenario piece, like the big Borg cube. That'll get people's attention.
Deep Space Nine, maybe.
Yeah, you know, Deep Space Nine is a lot of fun, but I ask you this: for any Star Trek fan, who wouldn't love saying, "Okay, look, we're reenacting the first battle against the Borg." Or Wolf 359, even. You're in control of a couple of ships. You're facing a Borg cube. Go.
Yeah, that would do it.
I think that would do it, especially when that cube's like 18 inches. It's pretty freaking gigantic.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little disappointed. Last year when we did the show, we had a lot of people play the game. But Ken and I were right in the front of the room, so when you first walked in, we were there, plus I was demoing Star Wars and Star Trek. So when people came over to play Star Wars, they slipped right over to Star Trek, and once they played Star Trek, they didn't want to go back to Star Wars. And it worked out great. This time, they didn't let me do that. This time, they did the Star Wars and left me and Ken in the corner doing Star Trek. I felt a little bit slighted, but that's okay. I'll get them next year, because next year, I'm going to be dressed up as a Klingon. Kapla!
Yes.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Star Wars. Because not only are we going to have a Borg cube on the table, but you're going to have a Klingon over there. And I might even be able to get Ken to pull out his old Starfleet uniform as well. Well, I'll get him over there to play the game. Trust me. Trust me. So, yeah. That's why our attack wing game didn't quite go as well as we had planned. We were sabotaged by the Empire.
The Empire does that.
But think about it. If you're just wandering around a convention and you come across Star Destroyers and the whole Armada thing, and then you got the whole X-Wing thing and Millennium Falcons and stuff, and then you got some people over here with Stormtroopers doing Imperial Assault and things like that, You're going to be fixated on that stuff, and then you're going to stop right there and say, oh, wow, and then steal all of our thunder. But that's okay. That's okay, because I'll get them next year. Don't you worry. I'll have a better report to give next year. But overall, it was a good convention. I made up a video that I posted on the Facebook page of all the costumes, and there were some awesome, awesome Star Wars costumes there. There were some sand troopers wandering through there that looked like they just stepped out of the movie. They were that good. And the Mandalorian mercs were there. Boba Fett was there. Bosk showed up. The skiff guy that threw Luke Skywalker off the skiff into the Sarlacc pit, he was there. Judge Dredd showed up, made an appearance. There was a lot of great costumes. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. The next one will be in October, and I'll be ready. I'll be ready for that one. So, yeah. So, David, what's going on around the shipyard these days?
We are working on some good videos. I've got a preview for Cruise's Bird of Prey, or actually a review at this point.
I gotta see that. I have been waiting patiently for that one. That's the one I want more than anything.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get that up probably tomorrow. We'll see how everything goes tonight. But yeah, it should be there for tomorrow. If not, definitely by Saturday. So that's in the works. I got a couple more things recorded. Warp Core Breach is off this week, Mental Health Week.
I had to do it, David.
I never said Klingon.
You didn't have to. You were thinking it.
You fought Klingon.
And you get Klingon.
Admit it, you thought Klingon. I heard it.
Oh, sure.
You may be a 9-day road trip away, but I heard it.
Anyways, yeah. Also, finally got a chance to film some more campaign stuff. So
One
of those videos should be coming out sometime soon.
Eventually.
I don't want to put a date on it, but it's high priority after Cruise's Bird of Prey.
So sometime from tomorrow till maybe a few months from now, in between there-ish?
No, it'll definitely be early May.
That's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, so, Chris, you'll understand what I'm going to say here. My computer was having hard drive space issues for a long time, and I couldn't figure out what was going on for a very long time. I finally figured out the issue. iMovie was storing a duplicate copy of everything that I had ever imported.
Oh, yours does that too. Adobe Premiere does that to me, and I have to reformat my computer often.
Yeah.
The girl
is... It's like 150 gigabytes are now free. And it's like, oh, I have space now. This is amazing.
My poor computer, as I'm petting it right now, it's 7 years old when 250 gigs was, like, spectacular. And now it's really hard. It's really hard for her to crunch 4K resolution.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear you. I don't know why they do it. I think it's to save time when you're previewing the movie or show, like scrubbing it as you're watching it.
Yeah.
But it's ever so painful when you're done with the project and there it still sits on the hard drive eating up space.
Yeah, that's definitely the problem. So anyways, now that I know that the problem exists, I know how to fix it.
Well, I did notice the review you did on the Vulcan Nivar, and I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, that had been sitting around for a while. I think I recorded that back in November. And then it just sat there, because I binged. I recorded like 10 things all at once, and I just edited very slowly. So that was one of the last ones I had recorded ahead of time.
Yeah, I watched that at work this afternoon. I was like, wow, I forgot about that ship.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have, and it's one that I go, I haven't run the ship, I don't think, ever. Maybe once. But a lot of the cards on there are really useful and can see some decent play in a mission. And I enjoy that pack. I'm glad it's around. And like I said in the video, Steve Stott, who's a Warp Core Breach contributor, is a big advocate of the Vulcans. And we've had several conversations about making that ship and other Vulcan ships more playable. And so I'm kind of like, you know, it's worth doing. And that's been my thing. The ships I review are ones that I want to have a reason for reviewing.
And don't forget, too, that's also Enterprise era. So you're not comparing that to a Borg Cube or the Enterprise E. You need to compare that to the Raptor, the NX-01, you know, the...
Vortivor.
The Kamari ship there, you know?
Yeah, the Zindi stuff, the Kamari, I don't know if you mentioned that, the Samra, the Romulan Bird of Preys, the Jazz Call and the Praetus, stuff like that. And if you do that, Enterprise is actually a really fascinating way to play the game, especially within missions. It's like, okay, hey, that's a thing to do.
Yeah, that's something that people overlook a lot when they look at a ship and, oh, this is garbage. Well, look at this ship and when it came out. You know, you're not gonna take a Sherman tank up against an M1A Abrams tank.
Yeah.
You're not gonna stand a chance. You know, same type of thing. So yeah, I did. I just wanted to tell you that I did watch that when I was at work on my lunch break today, and I thought you did an excellent job. And that was a ship I forgot about. And it's cool to see the older ships that you forgot about and see them again.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to work on now, is try to keep up with the new stuff, because now that they're only coming out every other month, there's only three to do every 2 months, so it shouldn't be hard to keep up with the release schedule. But then also kind of shake the cobwebs off of some old stuff and say, hey, remember this? I actually just recorded a video on the Kraxen, the Dominion Wave Zero ship, and I had to go, wait, that's in there? I forgot about that. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to go back and look at those often not used ships a lot.
It really is. So, and it helps you find new ways to play, new things to do, and that's always a good, enjoyable thing.
Yes, it is, and I have that video posted on our Facebook page for anybody that wants to go and check that out. It's there. You can watch it. And what's going on around the inn? I know that the Wandering Inn is going to be involved in an event that's coming up, Chris?
Yes, that's this Saturday. The local game shop is having kind of a game day. They've got a few guests coming out showing off games, and we're going to be there for Star Trek Attack Wing, Captain Stu and I. So that'll be fun. Going to play some Attack Wing. Debating on bringing Vulcans or Klingons, but I think that's a pretty easy bet that I'm going to be bringing Klingons, because Klingons.
They're Klingons, yeah.
I'm not bringing the Borg, because I know the episode isn't released yet, but I've had a tiff with the Borg, and everybody on my channel has a tiff with the Borg. And yeah, so I'm just going to sit back and play some Klingon for a little bit. And we're going to be playing a little bit of X-Wing as well, too, kind of getting a game or two in there as well.
Boo!
Oh, I'm loving the X-Wing, unfortunately. It's starting to really, really grow on me.
Now, X-Wing is a fun game, but I really think Star Trek is a much richer game.
Yeah.
Ken and I were talking about this. I'm watching everybody play X-Wing, and yeah, they got the Millennium Falcon, they got all these cool ships, and they are excellent models.
Yep.
You know, but you throw Luke on your X-Wing, you throw R2 on there, and off you go. When you come over to Star Trek, there's a huge history. It's such a deeply customizable game.
Yeah, let me build my crew. Like you build your crew.
Yes, and it has a whole dimension that's just not there. Well, listen, guys, we have to go.
Yeah.
The three ladies telling me that we're out of time. Wow. Well, thank you, David, and thank you, Chris. We'll see you guys on the next show, and thank you to Tommy Kraft for taking some time out with us. Send us a message on Facebook. Look us up there, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks. You too.
Good night, David. Good night, Chris.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.